Welcome to the Punks Unite podcast, where we discuss alternative health and wellness practices for those of you who are looking to find balance in both body and mind, but don't feel you fit into the socially constructed definition of what it means to be fit and healthy. Hey, my name is Jo, and I know what it feels like to be in a low mood during the winter time. So over the last couple of weeks, I've been sharing how you can lift your low mood, how you can get out of that slump, and giving you a couple of tips that you can potentially try if you haven't already to see if that will help. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the 9 people who have subscribed to my podcast. Thank you so, so much for supporting my work in this way. I truly appreciate it. If you are yet to subscribe, do so now so that you don't miss out on any future episodes. Feeling safe and finding satisfaction and being connected with others are essential to being a human being. For those of us who struggle with a low mood during winter months, it is important to remember that socializing can be an effective way to lift our spirits. In this episode, I will share how socializing can help lift your mood over the winter and obviously at other times of the year, and a couple of different ways that you can connect with others. We're going to begin with looking at what social interaction is. Now, it's pretty obvious that social interaction is simply the act of interacting with other people or groups. It can come in many forms, such as spending quality time with family and friends. You could be socializing through engaging in meaningful conversations, joining clubs or organizations, or just having an enjoyable time together. You know, sometimes the act of socialization isn't that you have to have a conversation, you just are in each other's company and you're with somebody that you feel comfortable with. Now, research shows that social interaction can have many benefits for our overall health. However, the studies are kind of difficult to measure against, hard to measure against one another because all the factors are a little bit different. Overall, they suggest that isolation is bad for our health and so socialization is good for our health, but the level and type of socialization seems to vary. So for example, one of the research papers that I looked at speaks about how important friendship is. However, the energy required to maintain those friendships, particularly on a cognitive level, can be costly. This means in reality, the maximum number of friends we can have, and this does include interaction with family members as well, is about 150. Now, to be honest, I think that's a lot of friends. So, I mean, if you can manage to have 150 friends, I think you're kind of doing all right. When I was growing up, one thing my mum said to me was you want to have 5 friends. She was like, that, you know, you want to have 5 people outside of your family that you feel that you can turn to, that you can hang out with, that you truly feel comfortable with. I have no scientific evidence that that is a thing to do, but for me, that has worked. It's just something that has worked for me, and that came from my mum. I have no idea where she got it from. She might have just even made it up. Now, in the show notes, I will include a couple of links to the research papers that I had a look at when I was researching for this particular episode, in case you're interested in reading a little bit further. The most obvious way to create meaningful connections is by socializing in person, which is no surprise, I imagine. But, you know, this isn't always possible. It really does depend on your circumstances. However, spending time with friends and family can really help to bring some light into your life during these dark, cold winter days. Whether it's meeting up for a coffee or having a movie night at home or being in the same room as you're both kind of like reading a book or something, or multiple of you, may not be just one person, but being surrounded by people that you care about can remind you that you are loved and supported in your community. And we all know how important socializing is. But when we have a low mood, I think one of the key things that makes socializing difficult, well, there's a couple of things that happen, but it's finding the motivation and the confidence to organize meeting up with people. It's super, super easy to slip into negative thoughts around socializing, and some that I have certainly had in the past and maybe even in the last couple of weeks or the sort of towards the end of January have been everyone forgets about me because I live so far away. Another one was why should I be the one organizing something? They should organize to see me. And what was the other one? Nobody cares about me. And all these thoughts do is leave me feeling lonely and ostracized. But I know full well that none of those thoughts are actually true. And I know that if my friends and family, if they're listening to this, they'll be like, oh no, Joe, no, we love you. You're really included. But because of the negativity bias, those types of thoughts pop up. Right. So while it is hard to be motivated, and also there's the element of social anxiety, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about this later in the podcast, it is so important to kind of recognize if your thoughts are actually bringing you down even further, and when you're able to kind of acknowledge them and you know, make an effort to kind of stop and go, is that factually true? That's going to be sort of a helpful thing to do. I have actually put together like 4 steps to stopping negative talk. What I'll do is I will put them in the newsletter for this month. So if you're on my Timely Thought newsletter, then I'll pop them in the newsletter as well. So you can kind of see what 4 steps you can take to help that will help you to stop negative self-talk. I actually have quite a lot of in-person events in February. I was very busy last weekend, and genuinely, after, even though it was a busy 3 days, it has absolutely lifted my spirits. Like, I genuinely felt better. I was definitely tired on the Sunday and the Monday, but I genuinely feel better for connecting with friends and family over the weekend. But I do understand, and it's something that did happen to me before last weekend. It can be really daunting when you haven't been socializing with anyone, or you've kind of kept to yourself for a little bit. It can be really daunting to go out and see people. So it's a bit like you don't have the motivation to go out and see people because you're not feeling great, but then you don't have the confidence to like meet up with people. And then when you do actually have an event coming up, because you've said you would, and even like, particularly if you're like somewhat introverted, the act of going out and doing it can be really quite daunting. So if you are a bit nervous or cautious about going out and socializing in person, here are a couple of things to consider. 1, start off small. Just go out and be around people. I went out for breakfast on my own the other day and just read a book. I sat on my own outside. But I interacted with people when I was ordering my food and my drinks, and when obviously they brought the food to the table, and that was enough. So I was able to kind of safely interact with people without overwhelming myself, remembering that I am quite the talker and it's very easy for me to make conversation, but I do get like wrapped up in my head that I'm not going to know what to say, even for me. The second is to then organize to meet up with 1 or 2 people at a time. So go for a coffee or a meal or a drink, or simply go out for a walk together. This way, again, it's like, so the first part is like just being around people, and you're in control of how much you interact with people. So you're not there to see anyone, you're there on your own, and you are talking to the person behind the counter, whatever, for a specific task. And then the second one is actually meeting up with people that you know that you're going to have a conversation with, or you're likely to have more interaction with. But then it helps for it. And for me, I find it helps for the bigger events that I end up going to, or if I end up having to go up to London or something like that, it helps me not to feel so overwhelmed by it because I've already done these other steps beforehand. Some people are going to be like, whoa, man, you overthink it. But I do. And I know that there are other people out there that overthink it like I do as well. I really do find that doing those first 2 steps helps me to prepare for group interactions with lots of friends. And it makes it so much easier for me to go out in public. One other thing that I find very useful are loop earplugs. Now, I typically use them for live gigs and band practice. However, I have used them for noisy situations to avoid being overstimulated and to help reduce my experiences of anxiety. I have a professional set because I use them for live shows, but they do have a range of earplug types depending on what you're after. And they also have a quiz to help you work out what it is that you require. I'll link to loop earplugs in the show notes. But I think it's, you know, if you do suffer with anxiety, the being in crowds and things is just sometimes overstimulating. It just really depends on where I'm at, I think. You know, sometimes I'm cool in crowds, other times I'm not. I often will find that I have to like stare at people's feet. Like I can't, if I'm in a crowded situation, I have to look at people's feet. I can't, if I look out and see the sea of people, it can make me feel really uncomfortable. And then when I'm in, say, going grocery shopping or something like that, you know, grocery shops aren't always busy, but they can be very noisy. There's lots of stuff going on. And so one of the other things I do sometimes if I don't have my earplugs on, so what I will use sometimes are my AirPods when I'm out grocery shopping. And then again, it's just helping with the overstimulation and reducing my chances of being of feeling overwhelmed and anxious. I don't always need to do this, but as I said, if you deal with anxiety on a regular basis, you know that some days are worse than others. Some places that you go to are more triggering than others. Like it just depends on where you're at. And the thing is that when you are having your bad days, you don't always have the option to just crawl into bed until it goes away. I try not to do that personally. I have done it in the past, where if my anxiety's been really bad for whatever reason, I just want to get into bed and go to sleep. I mean, I'm always in those situations going, oh, I wish I had a Valium right now, because then that would like sedate me and I could go to sleep. When that happens to me now, I treat it in the same way I treat alcohol. And I know this sounds really strange, but hear me out. I won't drink alcohol when I feel really down. I'll avoid it because I enjoy drinking beer typically, and I don't want it to be associated with the quote unquote bad times, but instead the good fun time. So I want it to be, if I'm going to have an alcoholic beverage, I don't want it to be like the thing I go to when I'm feeling really depressed. I don't, because I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to ruin the enjoyment I get from having an iced cold beer because of like feeling down and depressed. So the same goes for me for getting into bed and sleeping when I feel anxious or depressed. I prefer to take action. The, you know, things I like to do when I'm feeling good, one of the things is just binge watching like YouTube or something. I don't want that enjoyment of binge watching YouTube to be tainted with the fact that I also do it when I'm feeling anxious and depressed. I know this doesn't work for everyone, but I don't want the things that I enjoy to be tainted by the things that the unpleasant experiences that I have. And so when I do feel anxious or depressed, I very much try and take action in some way. It's different for everyone, obviously, but I am definitely an action taker when it comes to overcoming my anxiety and depression. Now, I fully understand that some people don't have this option, and I have certainly been in a place where I was depressed enough not to get out of bed. But I got to a point in my life, from all the different practices that I've done over the years, you know, the physical yoga or the yoga asana to the meditation and the breath work and the relaxation and now positive neuroplasticity training. Like these are all the different steps that I've kind of worked on throughout God knows how many years. And I got to a point where I decided I didn't want my anxiety and depression to rule my life. And I took the steps that I've taken to get myself to where I am now. Doesn't mean I don't have bad days, but I made a promise to myself that the things that I enjoy in life. I mean, I enjoy a lot of different things, but you know, we know that when we're dealing with some unpleasant emotions, we want a quick fix. Alcohol is often a very quick fix and other drugs. And then also trying to like sleep it away to pass the time, because we know that when we sleep, if we can sleep, we know that the time just kind of goes, because we want to get past this unpleasant feeling really quickly. I don't want some of the good things that I enjoy, like having an iced cold beer or sitting down and relaxing, watching, binge watching architecture programs on on YouTube, or I don't know, other crime, true crime stuff. I don't want that to be ruined by my depression or anxiety. And so, yeah, I try and find ways, like if I'm feeling really terrible and I need to go to the grocery store, how can I do that? How can I make the experience of going to the grocery store when I'm feeling really anxious easier? And one of the ways in doing this is by wearing earplugs. So I know I went on a little bit there, but I really just feel that we can allow our experiences with anxiety and depression consume us and rule our life, or we can tell it to fuck right off and we're going to get on with it. And it's different for everyone. But for me, I don't want it to ruin my life. I don't want it to stop me from living this one life that I have. Other things that you can do for socializing in person, if, you know, above and beyond maybe visiting family and friends and sitting in conversation or going and having a coffee or a beer somewhere, is that you can join clubs or organizations that align with your interests. So this will not only help you meet new people, but it also gives you something to look forward to doing each week, particularly if it's something that you're interested in, because obviously if we're interested in it, it makes it fun and enjoyable. Try volunteering. Helping others can make us feel really good about ourselves, and it gives us a sense of purpose and accomplishment. And then taking up hobbies. Now, I believe hobbies can be something you can do as a pastime on your own, or you can do it with other people. It also helps as a conversation starter and finding common interests with others. So I love learning new skills, and I'm definitely someone who has quite a few different hobbies. But I'm also very interested in what other people do, because, you know, if something brings somebody passion and you see them light up, there's nothing better than hearing somebody talk about something that makes them really light up inside. And typically they are their hobbies or their interests. If leaving the house isn't an option or it doesn't feel right, online interaction is the next best thing. And we've got things online now since the pandemic. Obviously, people are so much more used to doing things online, and a lot of people have discovered Zoom. But you know, you can even use other apps that you have on your phone already, like Skype or FaceTime, and you can get in touch with your friends or family members. And it really hasn't ever been easier to stay connected with your loved ones from home without sort of leaving the house. When I moved to the UK back in 2008, the way I kept in touch with my parents in Australia, and I still do, is through video calls. I mean, even way back in 2005, when my brother moved to the UK, we kept in touch with him via video call. It's been something I've been used to for a very, very long time. I think it's just such a great invention, and it really has allowed me to physically see how my parents are and for them to see me, because so much of social interaction and how we communicate is via body language and facial expressions. So video calling, especially with the people that you can't see in person as regularly as you might like, is really wonderful. You can still get the connection, obviously not as great as seeing people in person, but you can still get the connection through the video calls. As with in-person socializing, online interaction can also be through clubs, groups, coaching programs, book clubs. I mean, the options are endless. It's like so possible to find so many different things online for yourself. One of my favorite meetups is a monthly call with the alumni of the Future Thought Leader program curated by Femily. For me, this group is not just about sharing and hearing what each of us is doing in our businesses to develop a more feminist and inclusive approach. But it's also a place where I feel heard, witnessed, and supported. I learn a lot from what others in the group are doing. It really expands my mind and what's happening elsewhere in the world, outside of what I see in the media. And it's a real important part of my own development. If you are curious about Femily's Future Thought Leader program, I will also include a link in the show notes so you can find out a little bit more about it. I'm also part of a quarterly positive neuroplasticity training teachers meeting led by Dr. Rick Hansen. Again, this is a place for me to grow and develop my skills for my own personal benefit, but also so I can share with you and my students through my own online programs. Plus, interacting online means that you don't have to worry about large crowds or other potential triggers that that happen or come up due to it, your anxiety disorders, if you have anxiety. When you kind of do things online, you're in a little bit more control about how much you participate, whether you have your camera on or not, particularly if it's a group call or something like that. It's also important to be aware of how much energy socializing requires from you. Some find too much socializing tiring, while others thrive off it. Now, people often mix up the terms extroversion and introversion. They are popular personality traits. We're all familiar with them. I'm absolutely certain you know and have heard of extroversion and introversion. An extrovert is often described as being the life of a party, and an introvert is someone who keeps to themselves. Pretty standard, pretty common description. You also have ambivert. That's also a personality trait, which is someone who falls in between the two, and typically they change their behavior based on the situation they find themselves in. From an energetic perspective, however, someone who is extroverted is typically someone who needs to be around people to feel alive. That's where they gain their most energy from. Whereas an introvert is someone who needs space away from people to rest and recuperate. So, for example, people will often see me as either an extrovert or an ambivert. I'd say that I'm more of an ambivert personally. However, from an energetic perspective, I'm introverted. I know socialization is important and I often have a good time, but I really need time afterwards to rest. As I said earlier in this episode, I went and saw some friends and family at the weekend, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday was like busy with seeing people. And then Sunday evening, I was knackered, and Monday, I was still knackered. And I know that when I do any type of socializing, I have to have like the time to myself to really to rest and recuperate, basically. I do think that a lot of this is because I talk too much. So I likely just bring it on myself. No matter where you believe you sit with the energetic trait or the personality trait, because of course there isn't just one or the other, or the bit in the middle, there's a scale. It is crucial that you listen to yourself when deciding how much socializing is ideal for your needs. If you are avoiding interacting with other people because you need space, then you need to respect that need. Be confident in where you are at so that you can make sure that you're getting enough rest while still being able to enjoy the time with the people who have a positive impact on your life. We all know the importance of staying connected to our communities and engaging in meaningful conversations. And a lot of today's podcast has really been focused on the benefits to our mental health, but there are some other tangible benefits of social interaction. I've got another four to share with you, and I guarantee that this list is definitely going to include some, oh yeah, of course, type thinking. First up is that it helps to develop our critical thinking. When we're able to share our experiences, our thoughts, our opinions, we are discovering more about ourselves and the people around us. Critical thinking means we analyze the facts and form judgments. And social interaction gives us the opportunity to think critically about the world around us. When we engage in conversations with other people, we learn to see things from different perspectives. We're able to challenge popular beliefs and assumptions and come up with creative solutions to problems. This helps us to become better problem solvers and stay informed about current events. I'm going to link to an article about why critical thinking is important in the show notes, but it's something that is kind of obvious. However, you're not just going to go and have a chat to a random person and get into a really deep political conversation. You might do that, but I personally think I would find that terrifying, and it wouldn't be coming from a place of safety and compassion. I would potentially be very frightened and maybe want to kind of have my side of the story heard. Like it does depend on how you're approaching the conversation. Like it's super important, obviously, that we can all be as open-minded as possible, but you can't guarantee that the other person you're speaking to, if you don't know them, is also going to be open-minded. So whilst it does help with critical thinking, I think with those types of conversations where you're going to be maybe, what was the word I used earlier? If you're going to challenge any popular beliefs and assumptions, you may want to consider who you're having that conversation with. Just something I definitely just wouldn't want to have, like, a challenging popular beliefs and assumptions with a random person. Other people thrive off it. Me, I find it terrifying. The second thing is that it improves emotional intelligence. So you would have heard of the IQ measurement of intelligence. So IQ stands for intelligence quotient. There is also something called EI, or emotional intelligence, and this gained popularity in the 90s after the publication of the book Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. Emotional intelligence is kind of our emotional maturity. Well, that's kind of how I've always seen it. So if you have high emotional intelligence, things you can do is recognize emotions in yourself and others, as well as using that emotional intelligence to guide and inform your behavior. There is an interesting article on Psych Central which covers emotional intelligence in more detail. But as a quick overview, it states that there are five components of emotional intelligence: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. So from a socialization perspective, for understanding body language cues and learning how to express our emotions effectively, to being able to identify emotions in others and empathizing with them, social interactions help us become more emotionally aware of individuals. As feminists, I think this is especially important since so much of our work revolves around helping others feel heard and understood. I did also come across an interesting article on emotional intelligence and neurodiversity, which I will also link in the resources section of the show notes for those of you who are interested. The third is that it encourages self-expression. When you are with a group of people that you consider your closest friends and family, people that you truly feel safe and comfortable with, social interactions can give you a chance to practice self-expression without fear of judgment or criticism. We can talk openly about our feelings, share experiences that are unique to us, debate ideas we believe in passionately. The list goes on. It's a bit like what I was saying earlier about the critical thinking. You know, the critical thinking enables us to form opinions and judgments about things, as long for me. A value is that we come from a place of openness and open-heartedness and compassion. But also, if you're the person that's expressing yourself, you're going to want to do it in a safe environment. I think as well, being able to express how you feel about something can be helpful to other people. One of the things that I've always been open about is about my experiences with anxiety and depression. I've never really, well, I would say since maybe moving to the UK, I've never really bothered to hide them so much, even, you know, particularly with my family. I'm pretty open about it because I genuinely believe that by me being open about it, it gives other people the confidence that potentially they also suffer with it and they want to share as well. And then when I hear that they also experience it, then I feel less alone. And so it helps to build a connection and strength between your friends and your family who that you probably did already have, but it's, I think when it comes to mental health, there's so much hidden. And in British culture, there is very much the stiff upper lip type mentality. And I don't know, like a lot of people suffer in silence, and that really, really upsets me to know that people suffer in silence, particularly when it comes around to friends and family who struggle with any mental health, really, but anxiety and depression, because I can relate to that, to think that somebody else in my family or any of my close friends is dealing with that and not speaking with anyone about it, that really concerns and upsets me. And I would never want anyone to feel that they're alone, because I know what it feels like to be alone and in that sense, and it's not great. So when you're able to express yourself, whether it's to express how you're feeling about something truthfully and honestly, or whether you're able to sort of express your interest in something, you know, it doesn't all have to be down the side of the emotions. It helps us all to feel a little bit more confident, but also gives us that sense of belongingness within our communities, which is really invaluable, I feel. As I was saying, like for me, it's so important to be able to practice self-expression, whether it's through sharing my experiences with anxiety, general conversation, or through dance. It's just very important to be able to do that, particularly for like physical movement and dance. There's something about it that really helps me to like feel, it's just going to sound really weird, but feel at one with the world. I don't know what it is about it, but it's just that physical expression or physical self-expression has a lot of freedom to me, particularly as I've said in my previous episodes, the weirder you dance, the better. And I actually also see conversations as a learning experience. So even if someone states that I'm wrong, it's good for me to question where I am getting my beliefs and from with that subject. And, you know, I think it's also very important for me to listen to someone else's point of view, as I said earlier, with an open mind and heart. Listening to their self-expression compassionately, yeah, it's a big part for me. And that's something else. That's a, you know, self-expression is the third thing that's a benefit from social interaction. And then the fourth one, which is the last one, is about strengthening personal connections. So this is one, I would say, one of the most important benefits, because one of the core needs as a human is to feel connection. So when we're at school and college or university, or maybe even in the workplace, making friends could be relatively easy. I know that making friends is easier for some than others, but from my personal experience, because, you know, I was around people through school and extracurricular activities like my ballet, I had friends, and I don't really recall it being awkward when meeting someone new or making a new friend. However, as an adult, I can feel really awkward sometimes when I make new friends. It doesn't come across. You won't notice. You'll just be like, oh, Jo, she's really extroverted. But that's why I talk too much. But when I moved to the UK, the friends that I have made here were through other people. So my brother already lived here. He was very kind to introduce me to his group of friends from his band. And then I met people at gigs that were in bands, or they were friends with the bands in the lineup. And that's basically how I became friends with people in the UK, is through music, through the common interest of punk and the punk scene. So whether you're meeting someone new at a gig or connecting with an old friend over lunch, these relationships can be invaluable sources of encouragement throughout our lives, including during difficult times when you feel that you need a little extra support. That's one of the big things. People say it all the time. You're never alone. And you're not, but you can sometimes feel alone. It can be very hard if you're the type of person who potentially is a person who gives service to others. If your role in your life is a serving role, actually saying to people, I'm hurting right now, or I need support right now, can be very difficult, but you need to do it if you are struggling in any way. There is support out there, whether that's in your community, your friends or your family, or with a professional. You are never alone. So that's it for today's episode. That's quite a big one today, wasn't it? So I want to recap. Socializing during the winter can be an excellent way to lift your mood and stay connected with your community, whether it's meeting up in person where possible or connecting virtually through technology like Zoom or Skype. There are many ways to maintain healthy relationships while prioritizing your self-care and finding balance in your life. Social interaction provides numerous benefits. I listed a lot of the ones around the benefits of lifting a low mood today, but I also listed another four. There are lots of other benefits, you know, so don't feel like it's limited to that. There's lots of benefits to being able to socialize with people, but some of the ones that I mentioned today were developing critical thinking skills, improving emotional intelligence, encouraging self-expression, enhancing mental health, and obviously strengthening personal connections. Ultimately, though, it's important to remember that when you feel loved and supported by those around you, it's really very key to your overall well-being, no matter what season it is. Connection is one of the core needs, and it is incredibly important for us to feel as a human being. And also, that something that's really important that we touched on today was that if you do feel overwhelmed or disconnected from your community, reach out. Reach out for some much needed connection. And, you're not alone. There are people out there who love you. And there are also people out there, professionals who can help you through the more difficult times if you've got a low mood. Finally, listen to your body. If you need to rest, rest. Don't force yourself to over-socialize. Remember, if you are feeling low, helpless, really out of sorts, there is professional help out there. I know I've mentioned it a couple of times at the end here, but I forgot to mention maybe a resource that you could use. There is an online resource called betterhelp.com. I am not sponsored by them in any way. I just know that they offer various ways for you to speak with a certified therapist. And of course, you should also speak with your doctor as well. If it is any consolation, I meet with my own therapist online every month. I have no shame in speaking about it. I find it really fucking useful. I didn't speak to my therapist during December and January. Now, I've been speaking to my therapist regularly for probably 3 years. Initially, I think it started off weekly and then I changed it to monthly. And then at the end of last year, I was like, oh, it's going to be really busy throughout December and January. Let's connect in February. And I think it was the week before last, I got in touch with my therapist. I'm like, do you happen to have any availability this week? Because I was like, I need to talk to you. I need to actually get some of these things out of my head or out of my journal and speak to a professional about what I'm going through at the moment. So don't feel ashamed if you need to speak to somebody outside of your friend and family group. If anything, I think it's better because they are seeing your world from a different perspective. They're not emotionally involved in any way. If you're interested in learning more about the HEAL technique that I speak about with regards to positive neuroplasticity training and how you can use it to create experiences that help fill the core need of connection, so for example, to feel loved, develop a sense of belonging, or feel recognized and appreciated, then take a look at my positive neuroplasticity training course. You'll find the details over at pnt.joedelacourt.com, and I'll also link to that website in the show notes. You may also be interested in signing up for my Timely Thought newsletter, because this month, which will be going out on Monday, I'll be sharing a guided practice for taking in the good, which is using the HEAL technique. So if you want to get access to that, then head to timelythought.joedelacourt.com and the email will be sent out on Monday. It'll be available for free for a limited time, and then, as per usual, will be part of the Punk Rockers podcast membership, which also supports this podcast. In the next episode of the Punks Unite podcast, I will be exploring the difficult subject of how to set healthy boundaries. Thank you again for joining me. If you have been enjoying this podcast, then unleash its potential to help countless others on their journey towards mental and physical well-being that transcends the standard patriarchal expectations by leaving a review via your preferred app. I'm your host, Joe. Until next time, peace and punk.